fitting that we sang a song about following Jesus wherever he goes before we studied tonight. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 25, so if you want to be turning there, as Jesus was teaching his disciples, it was his last week of his life. And it seems that in Matthew chapter 25, there's three parables that he told, and it seems that they are probably principally for the benefit of these disciples who were with him. He was about to be arrested, and he was trying to prepare them for that. They had just come out of the temple, and where they had talked to him about the great buildings of the temple, and Jesus said, there's not going to be too long before there's not a stone left upon another. Of course, he was alluding to what was going to happen in about, in about 70 AD when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem. And then he tells them three stories, three parables, probably to try to get them ready for that. We're going to talk about this parable tonight, the parable of the talents. And we usually approach it more from a current view, looking at how it affects us with Jesus' return. And there's certainly a relevant application there. But I think in the outset when he told it, he was talking to his disciples about his return probably to destroy Jerusalem within a few years. And he was telling them in those three parables, you better be ready, and what they should be doing so that when he came back, they weren't mistaken as those unfaithful Jews that he was coming back to judge. And we'll see that a little bit more. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes or at the end of the lesson. But let's look at chapter 25, and the story that he tells in 14 through 30 is kind of about the kingdom of heaven is like a master who goes on a long journey, and before he leaves, he calls his servants to him and puts them in charge of his possessions, and he's going to return later and he's going to reward them depending on how they used what he gave them. So why don't we read this real quick, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more. Chapter 25, beginning in verse 14. For it is just like a man, that is the kingdom of heaven, is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. And the one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one also who had received the 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted to me 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You are faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and I went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered and said to him, You wicked and lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow, and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him, give it to the one who had 10 talents. To everyone who has shall more be given, and he shall have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. And cast out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in that place where there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Okay, so like I said, first of all, this is what normally is called parable. I thought I'd put that up for you to see what a parable is in the Vine's Dictionary of New Testament Words. And literally, it denotes a placing beside, which is kin to the word meaning to throw or to lay beside or to compare. And it signified a placing of one thing beside another with a view to comparison. So, you know, here's a point that Jesus wants to make, and he throws down beside it, lays down beside it a story that will teach the point or illustrate the point that he wants to communicate. The second thing that we want to observe is the participants in this parable. Who's going to be the main characters, or two? Number one, it's the master, and he's going to be the Lord. And number two, his servants, these servants that he entrusted things to, and that's Jesus' disciples. And then there's the talents. That's the third factor involved in this story. And that's what the master left with his servants. What are talents? Well, I looked that up too in the New Testament, in the Vine's Dictionary of Expository Words, and here's what it said. It said a talent was originally a balance, then a talent in weight was hence a sum of money in gold or silver equivalent to a talent. In other words, it was a piece of money. It was equivalent to some type of value depending on the time, but it was usually in gold or silver. And that also depends on the time of when you're that it was actually being used. But it had another interesting note at the bottom in Vine's Dictionary. It said that the talent denoted something weighed has provided the meaning of the English word that we use, a gift or ability, especially under the influence of the parable of the talents. A lot of times we say, that guy has a great talent. And we get that from this parable. And it's very common in the English language. We use that all the time. And what we mean is he has great ability. But I do want you to notice that in the parable, the talent was really not an ability, it was a piece of money. Now go back and read that again this way. If you look at this passage, and I think this is verse 15 here, chapter 25, verse 15. He says, "And to one he gave five talents, to another two, and to another one, according to his own ability. And he went on his journey." I want you to notice there's a difference in the talent and the ability. A lot of times we talk about this as though the talent is the ability that God gave him. But look at how it reads if you put ability in place of where talent is. "And to one he gave five abilities, to another two, and to another one, and to another one, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey." Does that make sense? That doesn't really read right, does it? The talent was what was not the ability, it was the money that he gave them that they were to use to make a profit. And so he gave them each a certain amount of money based on their abilities. That's pretty simple. It says in verse 27, "Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest." So we need to think of it that way. We might even say that the talent was the opportunity that the person was given. You see that? The talent was like the opportunity that this man had was given. And that's my first main point tonight, that I think was the first point that Jesus was making, is that God has given us opportunities. And we need to see that we all have been given opportunities. That's the second thing that we need to see, is that God's given each one of us opportunities according to our abilities. In the story, the master gave talents or opportunities to how many of these servants? To each one of them, didn't he? He gave every one of us opportunities according to our abilities that we have. You may have a lot of ability, or you may have a little ability, not much. But God has given you opportunity. And this parable says that we should use the opportunity given to make a profit for our master. Think about that for just a minute. If the master had stayed in the country and not went on his journey, what would he have been doing with his money? Well, he would have been investing it in order to make a profit. And so what would Jesus be doing if he were still here? Would he not be using his opportunities to make a profit. What you know, look if you would with me to Mark chapter 1 and verse 38. In Mark chapter 1 and verse 38. A couple of things that we might notice that Jesus did when he was here. We know he healed the sick and did a lot of good things. Here's one thing it says. He had been in this town and healed many people, and he went away to pray that night and early that morning, and the disciples came and found him. And they said, "Come back, there's people waiting for you. They want to hear more. They want you to help them more. They want to help have you heal them." And Jesus said to them, verse 38, "Let us go somewhere else, to the towns nearby, in order that I may preach there also, for that is what I came out for." Jesus didn't come here to heal the sick and to just raise the dead and such. Those were temporal things. What he came here to do was to preach the message. And Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28, he came here to die for our sins, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So while Jesus did some amazing things while he was here, he healed the sick, the lame and the blind, the main thing he came to do was to teach and to save the lost. And just before he went back to heaven, he's told his disciples what they were supposed to be doing. Matthew 28, remember that, in verse 19. He left them with an important commission. He says, Matthew 28, verse 19, "Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age." So he had commissioned his disciples to go out and do what he was doing when he was here. And interestingly, they did a very good job of that. They and within a few years, only a few years, I want you to notice how well they did. Look in Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1 in verse 6. As Paul wrote to this church, he spoke about the gospel which has come to you, just as in all the world also it is constantly bearing fruit and increasing, even as it has been doing in you also since the day that you heard of it and understood the grace of God in truth. But he says the gospel had gone into the whole world. Look again down a little bit further, I believe in verse 23. He said, "If indeed you continue in the faith firmly established and steadfast and not moved away from the hope of the gospel that you have heard, which was proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, was made a minister." So here Jesus commissioned his disciples back maybe 30 years before, maybe 20 years before, and before he left, and he said, "I want you to take this message and you spread it to the whole world." And with only a few short years, Paul says, it's already reached the ends of the earth. It's already been spread. Did they do a good job? They did do a good job. They accepted their commission and they worked diligently at it. They weren't successful because they had great talents, in the sense that we use the word, abilities, but because they were faithful servants. That's something in Matthew chapter 24, let's go back there to our text, Matthew chapter 24 and 25. In Matthew chapter 24, verse 44 through 46, he spoke about what this master would be looking for when he came back. He said, "For this reason you be ready too." This is verse 44 of Matthew 24. "You be ready too, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour which you don't think he will. Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at their proper time? Blessed is that slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes." Who is the faithful slave? He's the one who's doing what the master told him to do. And so we see these servants of Jesus that 20 years later, when Paul's writing to the Colossians, they've been diligent doing what the master has told them to do. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about some applications and lessons here. It's kind of a... Let's see what we can find that we can learn from this parable. First of all, the lessons, number one, I think, is just that our responsibility is equal to our opportunity. And we need to consider our opportunities. Compared to the first century, we have a lot of great tools, don't we? A lot of great opportunities. We're better able to communicate for long distances, better able to travel quickly, more efficiently. We, in some cases, at least we have better financial resources, at least in our country, maybe not in others, but to do the work of the gospel. We have great opportunities. We have a TV program. What a neat benefit. Not too many churches probably have that blessing to be able to have access to use that as a tool to share the gospel. But our responsibility is equal to our opportunity. There may be some other place that just doesn't even have that kind of access, and God wouldn't expect that of them. But you've taken advantage of the opportunity that you had, and that's what God would expect of us. So the first thing that we need to think of when we think of our obligation before the Lord to take is that our responsibility is equal to our opportunities that are given. The second thing that we can learn from this is that judgment is individual. Did the master judge each man in this parable on how much his return was compared to the next guy? You know, did he say to the fellow with two talents who multiplied them and made four? Did he look at the man with the five talents and he says, how come you didn't do what he did? I mean, he got 10 for me. How come you couldn't do that? You know, did he compare what one man did to the other? He didn't, did he? Think about the one talent man. Here's a guy who just had one opportunity. So would less opportunity mean that he had more or less was required of him compared to the others? Well, less. He didn't have the same opportunities that other people were given. And yet, the interesting thing is, this guy didn't do anything. He did nothing. Look at verse 26. Why did he not do anything when yet he had only one opportunity? But look at verse 26. He says here about the man, he says, but his master answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I didn't sow and gathered when I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank. And on my arrival, I would have received my money back with interest. This master, he said, this master is really hard. He's exacting. He has high expectation. And the Lord says, well, if you knew that, then you should have been very diligent to take advantage of your opportunities so that you'd have something to show for your efforts when he came back. But I think it's important to see that the judgment was individual. It was not, he didn't look at the congregation. He doesn't, and you think about that. Let's go to another one. Well, I think not compared with others. Let's talk about this other one. Was the judgment of the master based on the talent of the generation or the congregation or the individual? It was based on the individual's opportunities. And you think, what effect would it have if we view the Lord's work largely as a congregational activity? You know, what would happen is if that's the only way we really looked at the work that we were to do as for the Lord? Well, we would probably only do as much as the group did collectively. And if the group wasn't doing much collectively, we'd say, well, we're not doing anything right now, so what am I supposed to do? But if we understand it to be individual, then we will be diligent to take advantage of our responsibilities. We won't use that as an excuse for inactivity. But judgment is individual, and God judges us not based on that, how we compare to other people, but what we're doing with our own opportunities. And then the next one is that the consequences of failing to use our opportunities is here. What are the consequences of failing to use our opportunities? Verse 28 and 29, he says, therefore take away the talent from him. This is the man who did not use the one talent, the one opportunity that God gave him. Take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and to he who has an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have should be taken away, and cast out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in that place where there should be weeping and gnashing of teeth. First thing is that if we don't take advantage of our opportunities, God will take them away from us, and he'll give them to somebody else. And the second one, in the end, he'll send us to a place of darkness and a place of punishment. There's a lot of personal evangelism classes that churches do, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's good. It's helpful to equip us with some good tools, some lessons that we can use so that we can best take advantage of our opportunities when they come along. But it is interesting that the method that Jesus used to motivate disciples to be diligent in his day, he said, if you aren't diligent to take advantage of your opportunities, then you'll have to face the Lord, and he is an exacting judge at the end. So we need to be diligent so that the consequences of failing to use our opportunities don't fall upon us. Somebody might say, well, you know, I'd like to, but it's hard times. You know, I might lose my job. There's consequences if I try to teach others. Well, again, I think that's where I found it interesting to think about the perspective of Matthew 25 and where it fits in this particular time period. That Jesus has just warned them in chapter 24 about a judgment that's coming upon Jerusalem. And that's not too far off, only a few years off. And he's telling these three parables about being watchful and ready when that judgment came. And this is a parable of a master that's going away, but he's going to come back and he's going to be looking to see if his servants are busy doing what would be expected of them while he was away. And there would have been consequences. There was, you know, these disciples and these apostles who went out preaching and teaching, there were risks that they had to take under these circumstances to preach this message. And some of them died for it, and certainly some of them got thrown in prison for it. But you know, he's saying if they weren't doing what they could, then they would face the same judgment that God would bring on their Jewish brethren. So I think about that, and I look at myself, and I think, you know, becoming a disciple of Jesus means a whole lot more than just acknowledging that he is the Lord. It means that I have to confess him before other men at the risk of some consequences coming, at the risk that I might be rejected by some, or that there might be some kind of consequences with my job, or there may be some consequences with even with family, and even to the degree that it might be, there may be a risk of being killed. Jesus had expectations, you know, of his disciples in that day to use their opportunities, and the question is, would he have any different expectations of us today? Every one of us has been given an opportunity, at least one, maybe even five. So what are we doing with the opportunities that the Lord has given us? And then the last thing that I want you to think about as we look at this parable is the rewards. What were the rewards to those who were faithful with the opportunities that the Lord gave them? The first one is one that you may not even think about, that you may overlook if you weren't reading it carefully. The first thing, the first reward was, to those who were faithful, is he gave them more responsibility. We may think that's not very, doesn't sound like a reward. But that's what he does. In verse 28 and 29, when there was the man who had neglected to use his opportunity, had hidden it and buried it, the master says, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has shall more be given, and he shall have an abundance. Yeah, it's hard to think of that as a blessing sometimes. You know, somebody's it's difficult when people don't carry their own load. Somebody ought to be doing more. They have opportunity. You know it, but they don't do it. And now what happens is now you've got to do it. And sometimes we might gripe about that and kind of complain about that and say, you know, I wish other people would pick up the load. But God's reward to those who are faithful with the opportunity he gives them is to give them even more opportunity to serve. And so that's an interesting way to look at that reward. But there's another reward here too, and that is the idea of entering into the joy of your master. He says that to those two men who were faithful. he said in verse 21, his master said to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And he says that to the next man as well. What is the joy? What is the joy of the master? I want to suggest a couple of things. That certainly the one we usually think about is the joy of seeing the Lord. And we'll talk about that one in just a minute. But I want to suggest another joy 2. Look, if you would, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Look in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 19 and 20. When Paul was, he wanted to go back and see this group of Christians. He was hoping to, but he wasn't sure if that was going to be an option or not. And he says here, "For who is our hope, or joy, or crown of exaltation? Is it not even you, in the presence of our Lord Jesus at His coming? For you are our glory and our joy." Let me think about that for just a minute. Think about the people that you've helped. Think about the ones that you've studied with, or the ones that you, people that you prayed with, or people that you picked up and helped along. Think of maybe if you're a mother, think of your children and a father and all the effort of the work that you put into teaching them. What a joy. Not the only joy, but one of the greatest joys, to see those people safe with the Lord. Surely that's got to be one of the greatest joys of all. You know, we live in a materialistic world. So when somebody starts talking about a reward, it seems like our minds would just naturally, by default, fall into thinking about some kind of reward, some kind of material reward that we would receive. And he would even use this figures in the Bible about things that we're going to receive, like a crown. And we almost just fall into the trap of thinking, I'm really going to get a real golden crown that I'm going to get to wear on my head one day. Or we sing songs about receiving a mansion, and there are probably people who really think that God's going to deal out mansions when we get to the Bible. I mean, get to heaven and get to be with Him. And that just seems to be typical of living in this world. We start thinking that's what we're going to get in a spiritual realm, with the rewards that the Lord has. But what about the people that we love in the presence of God? I mean, what greater victory can there be than to see the people that we've taught and studied with and helped and worked with, to see them safe in the Lord's hands in the end? But there's also, certainly, when he talks about enter into the joy of the Lord, surely part of that has to be the joy of seeing the Lord Himself. And so we have the wonderful picture in Revelation chapter 4 of all these people gathered around the throne of God, and they're praising Him and giving glory to Him. And it makes me think of the song. I don't know if it's in this book or not. I haven't looked. But it's a psalm that says, "When all of my labors and trials are o'er, and I'm safe on that beautiful shore, just to be near the dear Lord I adore will through the ages be glory to me." What greater joy could there be? You know, who wants a crown, physical crown, when you can actually be in the presence of God Himself? What a victory, what a wonderful joy that would be. And so for this one who's faithful with his opportunities and works to teach and to use his opportunities faithfully, he says, you know, welcome in and enter into the joy of your master. And there's one other that he mentions here, and that is to these servants. He said to them, "Well done." And he said that, of course, to the first two servants who had taken the talents that he had given them, the money, the opportunities, and had used it responsibly and brought a profit back for their master. They had shown themselves to be faithful servants to him. And he says, "Well done." And I thought about what a reward that is. You know, when there's somebody that you admire, you have tremendous admiration for that person, somebody you really want to please, maybe you've been working for them, maybe it's your parents, what is it you want from that person more than anything else? What do you want from that person that you admire so highly? Do you want a raise, monetary raise? Do you want a promotion? Is that what is the greatest thing you know from that person who you hold in higher esteem than anybody else? Do you want a trophy, or would you want his approval? Would you want that, you know, just to hear that person say, you know, you've done a really good job, you know, you worked hard, and that is a job well done. mean, what greater reward could there be than for us to labor in this life and to be faithful to Jesus, to do our very best to take advantage of our opportunities that He gives us, whether we're a five opportunity person, five talent person, or a two talent or a one talent, that we try to take advantage of the opportunities we have, and then to stand in His presence and Him to say, yeah, you know, you did a good job. What better reward could there be? So tonight, we encourage you to see your life as a servant of the Lord. And He's like a master who's gone away, but He's not going away from forever. And these servants here met Him a lot sooner than maybe they even would have thought. Some of them were put to death, lost their lives for being faithful servants in that day. But the rewards were great. And how about us? We don't have that many more years, and we're going to stand before that master, and we're going to have to give account for the profit that we've made for Him while we've been in this life. He hasn't given us more than we're capable of. To each one, He'll give us opportunities in accordance with our abilities. But we need to be diligent to be bringing a profit for our master. Maybe tonight that's what you need to be doing more diligently, and we would encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity to make that commitment as we stand and sing our song that we've selected.